This time on episode 217 of Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., we're going to talk about the Inhumans finale episode and finally, Black Bolt. We're going to talk a little bit about Marvel news in our roundup and your feedback.
I'm Jeannie from Tyrion's Landing, a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You have been granted clearance by Director Phil Coulson. Stand by for S.H.I.E.L.D. debriefing. All information to be discussed here is classified and may only be discussed among agents granted clearance by the S.H.I.E.L.D. director.
Now it's time for your scheduled debriefing. I'm Director SP.
I'm Agent Lauren.
And I'm Consultant Michelle.
Welcome to Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., a Marvel Comic Universe fan show. The show is recorded on Sunday, December 12th, 2017, live from the Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. studios and broadcast galactic-wide via www.geeks.live. Ladies, happy National Pizza with the Works, except for Anchovies Day.
Woo!
So, pineapple on pizza, yay or nay?
Very yay.
If it's with the Canadian bacon or the ham or the bacon, yeah, absolutely pineapple.
Me too. I like it.
Yeah, we are decided.
It has thus been decided. We are pro pizza with the works, except for anchovies. You know what? I think I've had anchovies on pizza once, and I might or might not have been drunk. So my ability to actually discern if I liked it or not was probably not there.
I just can't imagine eating pizza with fish on it.
I know, me too.
I've had pizza with fish. I just haven't had a good pizza with anchovies. That's different. Anchovies is different than fish.
Anchovies is fish. It's actually many different species of small, oily fish. Anchovies refers to the way in which it's packed. I learned that the other day.
Right, but it's oily and yes. The excessive oil. See, that's different, in my opinion, than just a real fish fillet. How did you learn that? You said you learned it the other day. How did you learn that?
I was watching QI.
I see. Beware of Lauren. She is still learning. All right. Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a fan-based podcast on the ABC television show Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. coming back December 1st, 2017 for the fifth season. Yeah!
Woo!
Marvel's Inhumans. Guess what? This is the last one. This is the last time we're talking about Marvel's Inhumans.
Yay!
Yay!
Marvel's Defenders on Netflix, Legion on FX, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and the Marvel Comic Universe in general.
Because of cities being its people, not the place.
If you'd like to talk to us about cities, people, and places, you can find us at our website, legendsofshield.com.
If you would like to discuss how Ragnarok handled that better than Inhumans, you can leave us a voicemail at 844-THE-BUS-1, 844-843-2871.
If you'd like to talk to all of us, minus SP, about that issue, you can find us on Facebook at Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. Podcast.
And if you'd like to tweet us your thoughts of the superior Ragnarok, you can do so at Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D.
If you'd like to leave us a comment as we sit here and snicker, you can find us on YouTube at youtube.com/GunnaGeek.
And remember, Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a proud member of the GunnaGeek.com network.
Oh, guess what? Guess what? It's the last Inhumans. Hold on. We have to announce this. Here we go. The last Inhumans. And finally, Black Bolt. This has been 8 episodes of mostly torture to have to get through just because we're just picking it apart. And it's just, like Lauren has repeatedly said, like a first draft, which we have more references to this week. But before we get to that, let's get to the specifics of the episode, the creative team, and the main theme, including the title. So Lauren, what's with the title? And finally, Black Bolt.
Well, first of all, it was the title of a story in Thor number 148 back in the day, which is kind of amusing given some parallels in this episode. And also the episode revolves a lot around Black Bolt.
Yes, and we get to see or hear him talk, I think, for, I want to say the second, it could be the third time in the 8 episodes. So, yeah, we get to hear him talk. So, finally, Black Bolt. I did not know that it was the title of Thor number 148. So, that is awesome. Were all the episodes titles of comic books? I think
yes,
we talked
they
about
were.
This before. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Michelle, this was directed by none other than
Billy Gerhardt. This is his 9th discussion appearance on Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. Previous appearances are episodes 74, 122, 123, 144, 150, 161, 172, and 176. Has 25 directing credits in the genre starting in 2008, including one of the S.H.I.E.L.D., 4 Torchwood, 1 Justified, 1 Once Upon a Time in Wonderland, 10 Sons of Anarchy, 1 Jessica Jones, Marvel's Most Wanted, now known as a TV movie, 6 of The Walking Dead, 1 Timeless, 6 Once Upon a Time, which I'm still watching for some reason, and 11 Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., including Repairs, Nothing Personal, Ye Who Enter Here, Aftershocks, SOS Part 2, Absolution, The Ghost, The Good Samaritan, Boom, All the Madam's Men, World's End, and this episode of Inhumans. Also has 20 camera and electrical department credits, including SGU Stargate Universe.
Wow, Billy Gerhardt definitely has a history in the genre. I have to ask you, especially since the Inhumans followed Once Upon a Time on Friday nights here, I caught the ending of quite a few because I've set my DVR to do 1 minute before and 1 minute after of the shows that I podcast about. Learned that the hard way, by the way. So you are still watching it on Friday nights.
What the hell is going on?
Yeah, I know. There's a new curse with a new set of bad people, and it takes place with a grown-up Henry because he was around other realms. And yeah, I'm beginning to not watch it anymore.
I have one very important question, and this was the main reason I stopped watching in the first place. Does anything good happen to Regina ever?
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
Okay. We're making progress. That was why I stopped watching. Nothing good ever happened, and she was my favorite character.
Yeah, she develops from being the evil queen, and she has love, but she loses love, and now she's a cool bartender with fabulous hair, and... But yeah, some good stuff happens to Regina.
Is she a cool bartender on a starship at the forward part of the starship by any chance?
No one can ever be as cool as Guinan.
Oh, I didn't say she was as cool as Guinan. I was just wondering if she was bartending on a starship.
That should be her next role.
From what I understand, the Orville does have a bar sort of set on it. She could be on that.
Different network.
I guess if Once Upon a Time is canceled, she could switch to the different network, right?
That's true.
True.
That's true. Unless she has some sort of like network exclusivity deal. I don't know. There's weird network deals.
Are the exclusivity deals as long as the show is valid? I don't know.
I don't know.
All right. Anyway, so we had a couple of writers for this episode of The Inhumans, right, Lauren?
Yes, we did. The first writer is Rick Cleveland, who's been on this show. This is his second discussion appearance on Legend of S.H.I.E.L.D. He's previously appeared for Divide and Conquer, which was the third episode of Inhumans. He has 17 writing credits starting in 1998, including the screenplay for Runaway Jury, which was a pretty decent movie. 2 episodes of The West Wing, 1 episode of Mad Men, 8 episodes of 6 Feet Under, 4 of Nurse Jackie, 2 of House of Cards, 12 of Legit, 1 of Archer, Sea Tunt Part 2, fantastic episode, 2 of The Man in the High Castle, 1 of Under the Dome, and these 2 episodes of Inhumans. There was also, he's also produced West Wing, 6 Feet Under, Mad Men, House of Cards, Under the Dome, The Man in the High Castle, and Inhumans. And it was written by Scott Reynolds, who has 10 discussions appearance on Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. and 7 writing credits starting in 06. So he has 2 episodes of E-Ring, 6 episodes of Dexter Early Cuts, 9 episodes of Dexter, 2 of the following, a few of Jessica Jones, teleplay for 2 episodes, written by for 2 episodes, and story by for 1, 2 episodes of Iron Fist, and 2 episodes of Inhumans, this episode and Something Inhuman This Way Comes.
Wow. So we did have quite a few. Didn't Scott Reynolds also write comic books as well? I thought he did.
Yeah, he also created and wrote the Task Force UTF Undead Task Force.
Okay. So in any case, this is a very experienced pack. Scott Buck is not one of the names that we discussed, so I don't know how much of his hands were actually on this episode or not, but it was definitely an ending to the season, hopefully the series, unless they make it better, because they could make it better. I don't know. We'll see. In any event, it was the last episode. It's over. 8 episodes. It's done with. How do you feel about that, Lauren?
Glad. I've discussed before, the show made me angry because of all the missed potential, and this episode was just another example of that.
Mm-hmm. Michelle, do you feel any differently?
No, I'm disappointed that it didn't stick the landing. There are a lot of reasons why, which we'll discuss, but I'm happy it's over. I've noticed that there's been no hint of a second season. True, it hasn't been technically renewed, but there's not like huge news of it being renewed right now. And considering this is Marvel and ABC, if they were really proud of it and proud of the performance, it would have announced that it was been renewed probably around episode 6 or so.
When do you, in a normal TV series, because this is not normal, this was an 8 episode special run, or I guess is the best way to call it. So I'm thinking series normally get renewed somewhere in the March to May timeframe.
Yeah, but this is a short season. This was all IMAX. They made a big deal out of it. If it was doing gangbusters, if they were really happy with it, they would have announced it.
I think they would have announced it. I think you hear that for shows that are like the 22 episode run. For the shorter episodes, you tend to hear it midway or to the end. Mm-hmm. And we've heard nothing.
So if I'm working on this series, if I'm an actor on this series, I'm definitely have my resume out there and I'm going to auditions right now.
Definitely.
Okay. So let's talk about the specifics in the episode. Let's get to the fact that we now know, we had a big discussion a few episodes ago about the fact that the Inhumans really didn't have any keyboards. And we now know why, because they have hand scanners and Tony Stark-like digital augmented reality displays.
Which is, granted, pretty cool.
Yeah, like Minority Report.
Yeah.
Indeed. That's the sort of stuff that I like. And in the Minority Report-esque, the control room is where the two Inhumans were sitting that were displaying all the signals that were coming in from Earth on cable and from the various news networks and stuff like that. That was in a pool. So the pool is actually the screen, and it wasn't actually a screen. I guess I'm the one that's most fascinating with this control room. So there you go.
Oh, no. I mentioned before about how you have the two people in the white hoodies, which are really cool.
Yeah.
But they're just there staring at it. I mean, there have been fights in this room and everything.
They just don't move.
Yeah. I was actually concerned that they wouldn't be evacuated, but thankfully they were. Like they were
somebody grabbed them and...
Yeah, it's like, okay, you don't have to watch TV anymore, and you get to come with us.
Do you think they said, come with us if you want to live? No? You don't think they said? I don't know. I'm just...
They did, because they've been watching so much Earth TV at this point. It's very obvious they've been sucked into it. Do you think at this point they only understand... Like, they say TV warps your mind. Do you think they only understand TV references?
Well, see, I don't even know if they got out to eat, you know?
Yeah, what if they got stuck on like a Bollywood channel for like a whole month, but they can't move, so they can't experience the joy of the singing and the dancing and Oh, that would be torture.
Think of how stiff your back would be just sitting there the entire time.
I hope they had one little thing of cat videos constantly.
But then how could they think Earth is bad if they find cat videos? I mean, I can understand if you're watching the news 24/7 because all the news shows is terrible things because if it bleeds, it leads. But cat videos, you guys, cat videos and dog videos and hedgehogs floating on their backs in water and just seals, penguins. How could you think the Earth is bad if we have penguins?
See, I don't know if those types of videos were made available because those are like internet streaming videos and they were actually watching TV. Now I know TV can be streamed right now and it's all riding over the same signals to the satellite, but
yeah, so I guess they don't get like Animal Planet's Too Cute.
I'm sure they do. I bet you 10 to 1 they get that and it's like a window is minimized. You know, like when you're at work and you're supposed to be doing your, you're supposed to have it on like your Excel spreadsheet.
But instead you're watching Tumblr.
Right. And then what they do is they do that little switch thing where you can like hide the other stuff you're doing and you're only having your work up. So I think that's what it is. That here's all the awful, awful, awful things. And then people leave and then they have Animal Planet on.
Well, in any event, they're on Earth now. So they're going to see how things are really out there as long as Callisto Airspace lets them out. We'll talk about that in a second. But before we get there, let's talk about the relationship that is developing between Louise and Medusa.
So I've been kind of low-key shipping them since maybe the first or second episode where they met.
Wait a minute. Are you low-key or low-key shipping them?
6 1, half a dozen the other.
Okay.
But just the interaction between them, I was fairly convinced that Louise had a crush on her the whole way through. And then when she goes back and they hug and I'm just thinking, Medusa needs to leave Black Bolt and hook up with Louise. Because Louise has been showing her how people are not terrible. She's been helping her out. She's been helping her figure out things. And Black Bolt has just been a jerk the past several episodes. There's been no two-way support going on here that we've seen. Relationships are supposed to be both ways. A good relationship involves support on both ends. And if there was a second season, that's the plot I would write. Medusa realizes Black Bolt is terrible for her and leaves him. And she ends up as queen of the Adelan remnant. And Louise ends up realizing, oh, wow, now if I'm going to be with you, I have to help figure out what to do with all these people. And it's about trying to establish what to do with all these people and the challenges of that. And Louise acting as like the go-between. And it's never going to happen.
I thought it was really sweet that Louise got to give Medusa her dad's ashes. I mean, that came back. And because Louise really wanted to go to the moon, and Medusa's like, yeah, about that. Adelaide's being destroyed right now, so I can't really do that for you. But she does put her dad's ashes in a nice spot and covers it with a rock.
Yeah, that was really sweet. Like, again, there's really promising little moments in here, and that's kind of what infuriates me about the show so much.
I know they dealt with it before, but it could have been led up to and built a little bit better about Louise's dad. Glad to see him actually making it to the moon, especially with the backstory that we were given. So that's cool. The one thing that I want to talk about before we get to the real heavy stuff, and I guess this starts getting into the heavy stuff, is what happened with Maximus and Black Bolt's parents. And we finally figure out that Maximus is behind Black Bolt obliterating them because of the forged document, and that Maximus is really responsible for just about everything that happens.
Okay. So we find out that Maximus forged this document that said that his parents wanted Black Bolt to basically be lobotomized. And he thought that it was going to get Black Bolt mad enough to run away. And instead it got little baby Black Bolt to kill their parents. And the thing is, this literally comes out of nowhere in the very last episode. if they wanted us to have some emotional attachment to it, bring it up in the first episode. When we find out that their parents were the ones that banished Medusa and Crystal's parents. Crystal's parents. I always get Crystal and Luna confused, Luna being Crystal's daughter from the comics. Anyway, you just make a thing like, remember, your parents weren't all that great either. Remember how, after your powers were discovered, they wanted you to be lobotomized. And that is all you have to say. That is literally one line. That's all you needed. And you have this seed all the way through of their parents were terrible, instead of, oh, your parents were so loving. Your parents loved you. And then out of nowhere, this little thing in the last episode.
Wouldn't it have made more sense if the document said removal of the vocal cords? Because lobotomize, I mean, they're basically killing them.
Well, we've seen before with Mortis, they just lock him up in solitary confinement. We've seen that Adelan can be a really cruel place. So I don't think the lobotomy is out of nowhere.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, if Black Bolt, I don't know, it's kind of weird that he would believe his parents would want him, like, lobotomized. Like, if I was him, it's like, well, that's weird. Why wouldn't they just want to remove my vocal cords? Because that, I think, would have made a better threat, because it would have been logical. Anyway, that's just me. I'm actually trying to apply logic to this show. That's my mistake. I apologize.
Again, it's so much wasted opportunity and wasted potential. It's the Chekhov's gun law. You drop it early on so that you can reuse it later, instead of just dropping it in out of nowhere when we don't care. When you do this early on, you not only have the seed of doubt of whether or not their parents were good people, which we've already been kind of doubting when we find out that they've banished and effectively killed Medusa and Crystal's parents. But when we find out that Maximus, who we've already been suspecting is a terrible person, we already know by this point is a terrible person, when we find this out, it's just like the one last unforgivable thing, instead of, oh, yeah, well, that figures. Because seriously, it comes out of nowhere. This is what I mean when I say this show feels like a first draft.
Maximus does go off completely the deep end as he's on the balcony with Auron and just saying, this is all about me. I'm not going to turn off the destruction machine until the entire royal family is bowing to me, that I have demonstrated that I am in control. Dude, everything is crumbling around you. There is nothing that's going to be left for you to be king of if this continues. And he doesn't care. And he sends Auron off. And she's like, yeah, I'll be out in the hallway and I'll be there guarding you. I'm going to take my leave of you. And then we never see her again.
Yep.
This is what gets me. It's like this show, what, takes place over like a week or whatever. And we see Maximus kind of being reasoned, and it's like the writers were like, well, we have to make him the bad guy, so we're just going to, all of a sudden, over the course of the week, him lose it, and because we've just determined he's just the bad guy, we're just going to write him to be all over the place, and who cares if it's, you know, makes sense as an arc. But, you know, Maximus keeps saying, you know, you ignored me. It wasn't so much like him being ignored. The way the show portrays it, it's like you're born, but you're not truly born until you go through teragenesis. And so you could almost look at it like Maximus is like, I was born and this is what happened to me. And now you hate me just because of the way I was born. And that's no fault of mine. I was just made this way. And him still being, you know, he was sort of like ignored and nobody talked to him, and that can do something to people. You know, I mean, look at Mortis being locked up. Look at Black Bolt being locked up. This society sucks. I mean, so of course, I feel for Maximus because, yeah.
If this society weren't so terrible, I think I'd feel for him less, because we do see, yeah, he's selfish. He's not a good leader. He's a really bad leader. But then again, nothing I've seen from Black Bolt makes me think he's a good leader either. Honestly, Medusa's a better leader. Not great, because she's still, you know, very much buying into the system. But at least by the end, she's willing to admit when she was wrong.
Yeah, she's going through personal discovery as this goes on. And honestly, she's had just the life that has sheltered her from her ability to do so, both with her parents and then coming in to try to gloat to Black Bolt and then falling for him and then becoming king and queen eventually. It was a weird path for her, and she was kind of set in that. And it wasn't until she was able to be removed from that that she was seeing what truly was going on around her, because everybody was kowtowing to the royal family. That's a little bit of a head shaker to me that there were no indicators to her before this whole event with Maximus, but it's how things were, so I'll just take that on face value. I do have another topic to bring up between Karnak and Gorgon. Karnak is taking full responsibility. Gorgon is in pain. He knows that there's something not right with him, and he's asking for help, and nothing is done with that. So at the end of the series, all we know is the two made it off and are on Earth. So we'll have to deal with them eventually, possibly. But the one thing that I wanted to bring up is they were thrown in the Quiet Room, was meant to be this great prison towards the most powerful Inhuman. Now, each Inhuman has their own ability to be defeated, which might not necessarily be a weakness for somebody else. And so the entire time that they're throwing people in the Quiet Room, I'm thinking, you know, I think this can be defeated by a lot of other Inhumans. So this is exactly what happens.
That was pretty great. This whole time they've been using this place as a prison for other people when it was really just tailored for Black Bolt. And it's like, did nobody ever think to look it up? Oh, no, of course not. Of course they didn't. Of course they didn't. So Karnak points out to Gorgon, just like, just run into the wall, which he does.
I think that was the whole thing. It was built by Karnak. You know, there's probably a little label outside. It says built by Karnak, and everyone holds Karnak in such high, you know, like, I could kill you in three ways. Oh, by the way, there's the guy behind me. So we know he doesn't have his mojo back. But before this whole thing, he had serious mojo, and everybody was basically afraid of him.
Yeah. That was a good moment on this episode. I really like that. Again, the Gorgon and Karnak stuff continues to be gold.
So one thing that did not get resolved is the fact that their powers were being degraded or obscured in some way, and that was never really run to ground. So we don't know what's truly going on with the Inhumans and their powers, if anything. That was, could have been just a false thing that was led to us throughout the series, or there could have been some deeper thing that just they didn't have time to resolve in these 8 episodes.
I was thinking about this after I watched the episode and some of it during the episode. They're hoping, the writers, the producers, the crew, everyone was hoping to get renewed. So you have to leave some dangling threads. The thing is, you have to pick and choose which dangling threads. So where are they going to, what are they going to do now that they're on Earth? That's a good dangling thread. The thing about their powers, that's a good dangling thread. The thing about Gorgon, that's a good dangling thread. But annoyingly to us, when we know that this is probably not going to get picked up again, now, especially with regard to the powers, I mean, it's just a big shrug. I guess we could find out if somebody confirms it at a con or if they wrap it up with like a comic series or something. But I'm not really holding out much hope.
One good thing, as you just said, is this is part of the greater Marvel cinematic universe, so to speak. So there are opportunities, but we still have that dangling thread, that big dangling thread from the end of Agent Carter, which they haven't sewn up yet. Yes, they have sewn up different things throughout the time since the Marvel cinematic universe have started in 2008. But this is one that I feel it's going to be a while in the making, especially since Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which we'll talk about later, does not start on Earth. I don't know if they're going to get back to Earth or not, but it seems to me from the preview that it's all going to be in space. So we're not even going to get anything Earth related for a while. And unfortunately, getting back to the moon, we now know that Eldruck could not be evacuated. He was there. He was part of the city, perhaps the city itself. I don't know. And when the city fell, so did he.
Aw. Yeah. This whole time, I was like, so they're just leaving Waldude there to die? And the answer is yes, yes, they are. But, I mean, I guess he probably figured. He went through Terra Genesis and became a wall. You're not very mobile after that.
Yeah, there's no accounting for how old he was. He could have been one of the original Inhumans from when they actually went to the moon and created the Royal Bunker.
Man, I feel for him. He's another one that's basically, you know, like in a prison. You're like, could he move to other parts of the wall? Could he see anything besides that weird rock garden? I mean, you would think that if he could only be there, that they would have like given him a television or like some trees to look at or have some Inhumans like dancing every once in a while. Instead, he's just there. I mean, God, poor guy.
Well, he was privy to a lot of the Genetic Council secret meetings that happened in the open court. So yeah, I don't know if that was a new thing or something that had been going on for a while. That could have been entertaining for him.
Oh.
Talking about the Genetic Council, the big secret of why Black Bolt actually needed to become king is because he knew about this other threat that was not actually told to us what it was, but there's some other threat, and that's the reason for the Royal Bunker, not to enslave their own Inhumans. But that was the real reason for the Royal Bunker. That was the reason for Black Bolt becoming a king instead of giving it to Maximus. And that's really the reason behind the Genetic Council, not to ensure breeding, but possibly to ensure breeding of powerful Inhumans to combat this threat.
So we're all agreed this is the Kree, right? They're watching out for the Kree?
It's the most likely solution, but I don't know if that's 100%.
Well, considering in the comics, the Kree are the ones who created the Inhumans. And I'm pretty sure they're probably using like Kree technology left behind. That's probably what got them to the moon. And it's probably what a lot of their architecture technology is based off of. Or that's what I have to believe, because otherwise there's no reasonable or rational explanation.
Because wasn't the Kree brought in S.H.I.E.L.D. in season 3?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it would tie it to S.H.I.E.L.D. It would tie it back to the comics. So I do think that's what was going on. I think that perhaps the dome was shielding the signal from the throne to the Kree, because that's one of the things that we notice, like once the dome is gone, like the throne starts to like glow almost like a beacon.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably who it definitely is.
And jumping ahead a bit, we do see somebody that looks very much like a Kree in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. promo.
Oh, yeah, we did. By the way, I am wearing my Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Kree shirt today in celebration of it.
And the Inhumans writing, does look a lot like Kree writing.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely Kree writing. I have no doubt. I mean, we know that the Kree created the Inhumans. We know that the Atalan was just full of Kree writing and such, but we just don't have a firm connection back and forth. I'm kind of wondering, I would think if they're monitoring everything, if the Inhumans on Atalan are monitoring everything that's happening on Earth, they would have seen the Kree S.H.I.E.L.D. interaction. I'm just thinking.
Maybe that's one of the reasons why they kept hiding, is because they saw the Kree and they're just like, hold on, hide under the bed, hide under the bed. They'll go away, hide under the bed. And I think that's what happened. That's why we never saw them during that part.
The only other thing that I could think of is we don't know when this takes place. And Haley has brought this out very much before, where we don't know if this is happening before what has happened in the MCU or after, or where in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. timeline this is happening. So I guess a timeline would be nice at some point in time to actually plug this in somewhere. Now, if it's happening real time, that's one thing, but it could be happening at a different time. We have to at least admit that, because I wasn't paying close attention to like the models of cars in Honolulu to see if they stopped at a certain date, because sometimes they'll be that tricky and they'll do that. But I think they really just didn't have all that much budget or care when it came to the vehicles.
It has to be either parallel with S.H.I.E.L.D. or after S.H.I.E.L.D., because they talk about the Terra Genesis and the water supply. And that happened during S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay. That happened after S.H.I.E.L.D., I want to say season two.
I think so.
Yeah. Oh, I need a rewatch. Oh,
I know, me too.
I thought you were in the middle of one.
No, I was hoping to, but then we started watching Stargate instead.
Good choice.
Yes, we just finished Brief Candle the other day. We're in the middle of season one.
Keep it going. Gets yes. way better.
Oh, yeah. Later no, on. But even season one holds up. The only one we've skipped so far is the Nox, because we don't care about the Nox.
Okay. It's understandable. Yeah. All right. So let's talk about where the Inhumans end up. We don't know exactly when. I am postulating they're on some sort of an airfield just because of the baffles, the sound and jet blast baffles that are on the end of tarmacs and runways that they were there. I mean, it could really be anywhere, but I'm feeling it's on an airfield. As to where that airfield is, no idea whatsoever. So they're on Earth.
I'm guessing Hawaii, just because they filmed the rest of the show there. So, I mean, why not?
Well, that's where it was filmed, but I don't know where they're supposed to be betrayed that it is. Portrayed, not betrayed. That it
yeah.
is. So in any event, Callisto Aerospace, whoever the head of Callisto Aerospace is, has unfettered access to these Inhumans. And the Inhumans don't care because they're so naive. They're like, oh, we need a place to go because their city was crashed because Maximus was a butthead about it. And they just don't see the possible downsides to only having one guy look after them. I see all sorts of Declan-like experimentation happening here.
Well, at least they still got Louise on their side. I mean, I still can't believe the guy thought she was still like a lunatic. After everything that goes on in this world, oh my goodness, a moon base, like that's your line, really? And then it's like teleporting dog. He's just like, oh my God, teleport. It's like, come on, you had alien invasions and everything. Like, come on.
Again, we've talked about this so many times on this show. They had a literal alien invasion of New York. They've seen all this other stuff from the Marvel movies. Give it some credence, like a little bit, little bit. Yeah, things, once weird stuff happens, you've got to make allowances for other weird stuff, I feel like.
Yeah, I would think so, especially if you're supposed to be in a scientific organization. You know, even if it's a business, right? You're looking at the realm of the plausibility. Yes, there's realism, but there's also like, ooh, what's this discovery over here? Especially when you're talking about the four unexplained things that were happening around Earth's orbit earlier on in the series. I'd be worried, if only to protect my satellites, because if it happened in orbit, odds are if it's radiation or electromagnetic in orientation, it could affect your satellite. So I would want to be discovering exactly what those things were. Just saying. I mean, you're talking billions of dollars of hardware, not to mention the communication industry back and forth and the sensing industry. Yeah, I'd be a little bit worried about that. But then again, I'm a rocket scientist and that's how I think. All right. So we've been through the series and the title of the episode was, and finally, Black Bolt. We have to give a final ruling on how we think Black Bolt has done as king. We've done this rating system before over on the Starling Tribune, 1 to 10 for the captain of Legends of Tomorrow. So we're going to do the same thing with Black Bolt. I'm springing this on the girls right now. So Michelle, you know what I'm talking about. On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate Black Bolt as king of the Inhumans?
Let's see, since it's on a scale of 1 to 10, which rules out negative, I'm going to say, well, okay, so he admits that Medusa has leadership ability, and I think at the end he's basically almost acknowledging that Medusa kind of gets them out of the mess. But he is a horrible person. He imprisons Maximus in a horrible, horrible way. He's barely acknowledged that he's treated his people bad. He didn't even know the tunnels at all, and that's supposed to be part of his kingdom, and that's where the lower caste was. He's been keeping all these secrets, a one.
Okay. You gave a lot of great reasons. I'm not going to argue that. Lauren, what do you think? Scale 1 to 10.
Well, he's not outright malicious. I'll give him that.
He is acting in good faith.
Yeah, he's acting in good faith. I'm going to give him a 3 for not being outright. Maximus is definitely like a 1.5, maybe 1.5. But Black Bolt, he's at the top of the system, definitely not trying to help fix what's wrong with it. He's just a terrible person. Like, they've given us no real reason to root for him in this show. Like, the only moments of sympathy I really have with him are as young Maximus or when he's with Medusa. And when he's with Medusa, he's also, I mean, at first I was like, oh, I like their relationship together. But it's mostly on Medusa's end because she's trying to make him a better person. And he's just kind of, as soon as it's just him alone, he's like, oh, I'm going to do things the most destructive and horrible and self-serving way I can. Again, 3.5. He's not outright malicious, but he's not great.
Okay. I am going to give him a 2 for a lot of the great reasons that Michelle said and you, Lauren, said. I'm going to rate him as a 1. And this is not because he can't really speak. He is a poor communicator. He's keeping a lot of things secret. His own wife didn't know about the Royal Bunker, the whole Triton thing. I'm saying he's not telling people what they need to know. And the whole extra threat thing, I think that was handed to him, but he could have been more open on it. The secret society thing definitely doesn't work, especially when you're talking about a society that's only 1,400 people. Eventually, it's just going to go wrong for you. So I'm going to give him 1 for that. I am going to give him a +1 for his excellent groomed beard.
Yeah, the whole time I'm watching this, I just keep thinking, Anson Mount looks a lot like Jim Caviezel, to the point where I kept confusing him.
Yes, we've talked about this before, yeah.
Yeah. It made me want to go watch Person of Interest.
He's in a ton of stuff beyond that, but that was the big thing that was on TV for years and years and years. All right, we've started this segment a couple of weeks ago. We're going to continue it. Michelle, what was your mom's reaction?
Oh, it was, you know, before she was like, meh, and then like last week she was just like, oh, okay, maybe. But I asked her what she thought, and the anger. She said words I cannot say on this podcast.
Wow.
Well, you can say them, but you're going to get bleeped.
Yeah, I don't want to create work for the editor. Basically, she doesn't like Black Bolt at all. She's like, I don't know why I should care for him or anyone else. She doesn't like that he didn't tell his inner circle about the bigger threat, because it's like, if he died, no one would know, and then they would just be all left vulnerable. She's like, yes, Maximus was an awful person, but she felt sorry for him. But she's like, there is no way that Black Bolt should have just trapped him in that bunker and destroyed any possible way for Maximus to come in and out. It's like, just kill the guy. Just kill him and be done with it and have some sort of mercy. She basically feels like it was like a waste, and she's really angry. Like before, she was like, eh, okay, it's kind of getting better. But this is like the moment that he did that to Maximus, she's just like, I don't want anything to do with him. I don't have anything else to do with the show. I don't care if it gets renewed. I just, no, no, no.
Michelle, I love your mom.
I love her too.
She's great. I had the interesting coincidence of going to see Thor Ragnarok yesterday, and then I saw this Inhumans episode this morning. It's impossible to see the two and not see the similarities of how they ended. You're talking about the societies being saved as a people versus a place, and you're also talking about a larger threat looming at the end. Without getting into too many Thor Ragnarok spoilers, there was just a bunch of similar things. Now, Thor Ragnarok, I think, did it a lot better. It was a lot more entertaining, but it was a lot of the same things, right?
Yeah, there was a point while watching the show, my husband was in his office and I screamed, Thor did this better! Again, Thor had the benefit of, I feel like, a lot more time and money and care poured into it. And this, as I've stated before, felt like a first draft.
Yeah, this could definitely have been done a heck of a lot better. And I'm hoping as Disney pivots to their new streaming channel, which we've talked about before, I think, and when they pivot to that, I'm hoping that they give a little bit more care, just like they kind of did with the Defenders. The Iron Fist series was like, eh, but then they came back strong with the Defenders and they were able to right the ship, so to speak. I think we've seen a couple of negative things right now on the TV screen between Iron Fist and the Inhumans. And I just hope that this next season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. gets things back on track, because if they don't, I worry about them being overtaken by Fox and us not getting the tie-ins with the MCU that's needed. So that's just my two cents on the whole series. So, ladies, we are at the end of the Inhumans. It was an interesting time, and I'm glad that it's over. We're going to get into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in a couple of weeks. We're going to finish off the Defenders. But before we get to that, are there any last words about the Inhumans series that you want to talk about, Michelle?
I'm just really glad I could talk about it with you guys. It made this bearable, live tweeting it with Lauren. It's really interesting about how this really needed to be a group experience because, you know, like after I watched this on Friday and I'm just like, is it just me? And my mom, you know, was like, okay, it just wasn't me. And you guys, it's not just me. It's kind of helpful because I don't want to hate things just to hate things. I do want to see, you know, the good and stuff. I wanted this to succeed. But, you know, just frustrated.
So, Michelle, question for you. Which series was better, The Inhumans or The Cape?
Just because at points it didn't take itself too seriously, The Cape, this show really took itself too seriously. It wanted to be this highbrow, oh, look at this royal family. Look at this rich comic book background that we're going to tap into. And if you read the comics, then you kind of understand where the conceited, self-righteous nature of the Inhumans are. But just frustrating.
Indeed. Lauren, last thoughts about the series?
Just a lot of frustration at a lot of missed opportunities. And kind of relief that it's over and we can get back to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. soon. Because when they showed that trailer, I was like, oh yeah, I like this. I like this a lot. And it's, again, I've talked before about remembering that I like things and then actually experiencing them and remembering how much I like them. And there was just so much wasted potential there. Like, a lot of the actors were so good. They are good actors. And a lot of the writers are good writers. And I feel like they just weren't given enough time or energy or budget or whatever to work on this properly.
Yeah, we definitely have talked about the time constraints. So you never know if this was a year in the making, would it have been better? I don't know. I think they have, we've talked about it before in Marvel as a totality, they're stretching themselves a little bit too thin. So maybe this was too thin. I don't know. We'll see. In any event, next time in episode 218, we'll be talking about Thor Ragnarok finally when Haley comes back. Next Sunday, we'll be finishing off our Defenders run through with the penultimate episode, Fish in the Jailhouse. And with the great American Thanksgiving holiday coming up, we'll be able to finish off Defenders before we get to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And of course, the Punisher series comes out pretty soon too. So we'll be going down that path in the future. All right, ladies, I think we've put this one to bed. It's time to get into the news. We have a few news stories that Lauren has teed up for us. The first of which, if you had been watching The Inhumans on live TV, you definitely saw this, the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 5 trailer.
Oh, it's so good. So good, you guys. I can't wait. So soon.
So, Lauren?
Yes.
Have you ever flown an alien spaceship before?
Me personally?
The correct answer is, you know the answer to that, SP.
Ah, yes. Well, but we have everybody in space. The whole thing has this very Guardians of the Galaxy feel to it, including a guy with a Star-Lord type helmet. Mm-hmm. I was trying to say Stargate. I tried to say it like three times before the correct word actually came to my head. And we see a glimpse of a Kree. We see May flying a spaceship. We see all these people who are convinced that like Coulson and team have come to save them. I want to know what's going on. I'm so excited. Just give me my team back. I've missed them.
Indeed, including a Jeff Goldblum-esque type character, the same kind of character that was on Thor Ragnarok. So we'll see how that all pans out. Michelle, did you see this trailer?
Oh, I did. And I'm so excited for the return.
As is everybody. I think we all had our concerns after last season with the dwindling ratings and the writing that was ebbing and waning from time to time. But it is still just a very well done series. Looking forward to it in space here in December 2017. Next up, we have a nice story about Mr. Charlie Cox dropping by a children's hospital, Mr. Daredevil himself.
This story is so sweet. He went by Blithedale Children's Hospital and gave away a lot of Marvel goods, including a bunch of little Daredevil hats. And he's talking with all these kids. The video is adorable, by the way. Y'all need to watch it. The little kids ask him, like, how, if he's blind, how does he know where all the bad guys are? And he's like, well, he has these heightened senses. And kids are like, well, can you punch and kick? And he's like, yeah, they taught me how to punch and kick. And it's so, so cute. And he's mentioning is like, you know, that's one of the great things about being in this property is you get to go and actually meet these kids. And it's, you get the feeling that you're actually helping. And it's amazing. And every time I see the videos of people doing this, it makes me tear up. It's like, yes, there's still some good in this world. Everything's amazing.
Charles is a fun guy. And when he doesn't have his handlers around there, he does disclose a heck of a lot. And I can't wait until we actually publish the panel that I recorded way back when in Indiana Comic Con earlier on this year. And he said a couple of things. I can't wait until that gets out because I don't think it's been reported anywhere. So stay tuned for that at the Gonna Geek YouTube channel. I was going to say another YouTube channel, but stay tuned for that on the Gonna Geek YouTube channel. Now, moving on into Thor Ragnarok news. They're kind of wrapping up the promotional news pieces, and they're giving a little bit behind the scenes, including the headdress from Hela.
So Adam Savage and his crew at the Tested YouTube channel have a video of how they made it. Yeah, it was real. It wasn't like a CGI thing. As described by Jose Hernandez of Ironhead Studios, they were 3D printed, designed based on an accurate model of Kate Blanchett's head, and then finished and assembled by hand. They have it displayed on a mannequin of Kate Blanchett's head, and it is amazing. There's just these beautiful details that you couldn't really catch on screen, really. Like the coloration is this kind of oil slick green and black, and it's gorgeous. So I want Kate Blanchett's whole look from this movie. And the headdress, it looks unwieldy as hell, but it still looks amazing. So yeah, just watch the video. It's cool. It's really cool.
It was her battle dress, right? So when she did her Star-Lord thing, basically, and put her hands behind her head and then woof, and then the battle dress came on, and it was just really neat. And if you haven't seen Thor Ragnarok, go see it. It is SP approved. I'll give you that spoiler alert right there. And everybody I talk to wants to go see it over and over again. The one exception I will make to that is my older daughter, who went to go see it and was just literally, she has run herself ragged. She was so tired that she couldn't stay awake during it. But she's like, yeah, I totally want to see it again. So
the Mary Sue has an article. Let's talk about Hela and imperialism in Thor Ragnarok. There's been a lot of articles, and actually I wanted to link one and forgot, about Taika Waititi's influence in Thor Ragnarok, making it one of the most politically relevant and of like the Marvel movies, kind of subtly. And one that I linked on my Twitter the other day was about the Maori influence in it, including Valkyrie's ship being painted in the Maori colors, Valkyrie being the most Maori coded of the characters. It's a really good article. But in this one specifically, they're talking about Hela being kind of the stand-in for imperialism in the movie. Unlike the Frost Giants or Dark Elves, Hela isn't here to obliterate Asgard. She's here to unmask it. Where do you think all the gold came from? Blah, blah, blah. It's a spoilery article, but it's really interesting. It's a really interesting look at her purpose in the movie and the concept of imperialism in general. And again, because it's being made by a Maori filmmaker, who's, by the way, the first person of color to direct a Marvel movie, that influence is, it's there, it's subtle, but it's really good. And it's a point of view that I think is worth considering. I'm hoping to go see it again today. It's at some point soon, next week maybe, I don't know. So good. This movie is so good, you guys.
It is. I don't think I'm going to get a chance to see it again before we podcast on it, but who knows? Maybe Thanksgiving weekend, I'll back-to-back Justice League and Thor Ragnarok. I have no doubt both of them will still be in the theaters at that point in time, so it'll be cool. Now, this next news story, well, first of all, before I get off that, Michelle, do you have anything to say about Thor Ragnarok that you want to get off your chest?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was hilarious. And one of my favorite articles about it is when it looks at Hela as a queer icon. I can't exactly remember the article's name or where I read it, but it's a really good one.
I read that one too.
Yeah. It's great. Did you read it too?
Yeah. I don't remember where I read it either, but there's so many good. I think it might have been on the Daily Dot.
I think so. Yeah. It's really interesting how Thor Ragnarok, it looks all shiny and funny and quippy, but then when you actually unpeel its layers, it actually has layers, which is weird for a Marvel movie and such.
Kate did such a great job with the character. I really can't imagine anybody else doing it. I was thinking about that. Who else would I cast? And
here
maybe Carrie Ann. Yeah?
It's on Gizmodo.
Okay. Well, I was thinking maybe Carrie Ann Moss, but she's already being used in the Marvel Universe. So, yeah, Kate, I just can't imagine anywhere else. She really had fun with her. You could tell she was having fun with the role during the movie. So that was great. Now, onto a more serious topic is something that's been pervasive in the news lately of the entire industry and beyond the industry, to be honest with you. And we feel compelled to bring the story forward because of a lot of reasons, but we just want to talk about it. So, Lauren, you want to take the lead on this?
Yeah. So there's been a lot of discussion in recent weeks about harassment in the film industry, in other industries, but most kind of notably in the film industry. And as it's going through actors, directors, people, you know, stories are being told about what's been happening. And the Marvel Universe is not immune from this. Ellen Page on Friday posted a story to her Facebook about when she was filming X-Men The Last Stand. She was 18 years old and Brett Ratner outed her in a really disgusting and callous way. And she credits this for shaming her into the closet for much longer than might have happened otherwise. It's just a horrible story. And Anna Paquin retweeted the story and said, "I was there," which makes me think she was the other person in the story being talked about. And I think the ages match up about right. Anna Paquin is also notably queer. She's bisexual. And like we've all kind of known that Brett Ratner is a disgusting person. And there's a lot of people in the industry. It's like, oh, you hear the stories, you know, they're gross people, you know, but now that it's actually being talked about, people are acting surprised. But it's a problem. It's a problem across all industries. You're hearing stories about comics. It's a problem in Marvel Comics. Brian Wood is a known harasser and sexual abuser. Scott Ollie has a lot of stories told about him. And there's a lot of women and men in the industries who their careers have been ruined and they've been run out of the industry for speaking up or for not playing along. And this is something to be very, very aware of. Just because your, I don't know, hobby of interest isn't being talked about right now, it doesn't mean it's a superior hobby. It doesn't mean that there are people there that are blameless. It means probably that there are people there who are scared to speak out still. Because people abusers will find any small position of power they can find and use that against other people. It doesn't matter if it's just a small little piece of power. People will go for any, abusers will go for any position of power. Teachers, doctors, movie producers, movie actors. You're hearing about it in the RPG and the board gaming industry. You're hearing about it in the comics industry. Even if it's just a neighbor who just happens to have this minor position of power over another person. And people use that power imbalance to scare and frighten and shame people. And it's something to be aware of. And it's something to keep in mind as these stories are coming out. The shame is with the abusers and not the abused. And if you're somebody who has been abused, I'm so sorry. And I'm so sorry that this is coming out right now and probably making you feel horrible. Because you can't escape from these stories. And there's people you can talk to. There's people who are willing to listen. Hell, I'm willing to listen. I don't offer good advice. I'm the first person to say my advice is rarely good. But I'm here if you need somebody to talk to just say, you know, I hear your story. I mean, just reach out. I believe you. I'm sorry.
Michelle, I know you have a lot of things to say about this as well.
Yeah. One of the things, you know, everything that Lauren said, one of the things I want people to be aware of is there are some that are say, well, not all people that they've worked with, you know, like, oh, well, if he abused her, but how come the woman he also worked with over here isn't saying anything? Or she says that, oh, that never happened to me when I was with him. You have to understand that's one of the way, that's a tactic that they will use in order to get away with it. It's hard to talk about. Some abusers will pick their victims carefully. They will pick the ones that they know are weaker and who will succumb to pressure to be quiet about it. And then they will actually work well enough with just enough women or and everything just to make themselves look good. So that way then he can be like, well, why is she saying that? And look at all these other women who, you know, have said I'm good to work with. It is a tactic. So when you hear these stories and you're like, you're hearing, well, some, but not all, you have to understand that is a tactic that they knowingly use in order to keep themselves in power. And if you notice, another thing is that unfortunately is taking groups of people to come forward in order for one person to finally be seen as who they, the abuser that they are. That's another awful, it's just awful that, you know, we have others, there's countless stories where one woman says it, but then she's discredited. She's called terrible to work with and all these other type of things. So no, this isn't just all of a sudden. It's just for some reason now people are actually starting to take it seriously and things are hopefully going to move in the correct direction. It is a hard time. It's a hard time for all of us. But we do have to listen to what people are saying and to believe them and be supportive.
Thank you very much, ladies. I think that this sort of abuse is intolerable and that everybody needs to be respected, whether it's in the workplace or not. Everybody should be respected. And I'm pretty mortified that this sort of thing has been allowed to occur in the entertainment industry, which is very much so out in the open with publicity. And I'm really scratching my head where this has been allowed to prevail so long. I'm not glad that it's coming out, but I'm glad that if it comes out that more people in the future won't be abused. I think if you have been abused, I am very sorry that you have been forced to live through that. I know that it is not easy, and I know that in some cases you feel like you can't talk about it or you don't have anywhere to go to. I would encourage you to try to find those avenues where you can talk about it, because there are places, there are safe places you can go. And I realize that you might feel that you need to be very careful about moving forward with it. So if there's anything that we can do to assist you, as Lauren said, she's terrible at giving advice. I've had hit or miss times with that advice myself, but if you feel like you need to reach out or need some help in finding some place to reach out to, please let us know and we'll try to help you. But it is not something that I want to tolerate in life. So if you find yourself on the wrong side of this, then I am, first of all, I am very sorry that you've had to do, have to live through it, and we'll try to help you make it better. And I think as a society, we need to make it better for these people as well. It's just incredible. I mean, I don't want to point to a specific event and say this is where it started, but I mean, take a look at what's happening with the Bill Cosby cases, or where you have, what, 36 women, or I forget the exact number, come forward and say, yeah, Bill Cosby did this. Now, I don't know what else to say. It's just, it's horrific that this is coming out and that people have had to live this way. So I don't tolerate it. So there you go. I don't want to minimize this, ladies. Is there anything else that needs to be said about this right now?
There's a lot that needs to be said, but I think we're done for now.
Okay. Michelle, do you agree, or is there something else?
No, I'm good.
All right. So that is it for the news. We're going to move on to the feedback.
Okay. We've got some feedback from Twitter this week, and we're starting off with somebody new. At Profess Maloney, in response to the whole, we've talked before about the Mortis stuff and how we all sympathized with Mortis. And he replied to us with, that entire scene took me by surprise with its emotional weight. Yeah, us too. Again, I think Mortis is one of the characters I sympathized most with in this entire show.
I forgot about the whole Mortis plate and everything. And all of a sudden he's just taken care of, taken off the board. It's like, eh. He was like the best thing of the entire series.
Yeah, and then he's gone. Again, so much wasted potential there. We also had at Mr. Paracletes, in response to the whole who's the boss thing, actually, Rogers is the boss. Stark just pays for everything and makes everybody look cooler. Can we really argue with that?
No, and apparently no. In any given Quinjet, you can find some of Tony Stark's clothes, too.
That was amazing. And at Anthony Bachman sent us, this is why I credit all the creators when I do my pieces for the long box edition of Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. Always give credit, the creators deserve it. And this is in response to Big Bang Comics at the Big Bang _ saying, sometimes it's very frustrating to try to find information on colorists and letterers. Nothing on Previews World, and most publishers don't seem to care. Creators, please be sure to include your creative team when you're talking about, so this is, okay, normally I just include, when I do these for Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. long box, I just do writer and artist. But yeah, there is a whole team there. There's inkers, there's letterers, there's colorists. There's this huge creative team behind there that never gets credited with anything. And this is something, you're right, I should be more careful about. These people are artists too, so thank you for that reminder.
Yeah, definitely. And it's one of the reasons why the books that are presented by DC and Marvel are more complete packages than a lot of the independents, because there is this massive machine behind with all of the talent. And once you go to some of the independents, you might be missing an aspect or two of that, which might seem like a less refined final copy, which was what I've been noticing. But they're still as good of a final product, in my opinion, or better, because it's not watered down with the corporate editing process. So my two cents on that. And thank you very much for tweeting us on that, Anthony Bachman. And we look forward to hearing from you in the future on Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. Longbox Edition, which is still, believe it or not, under production. All right, Michelle, any other feedback that you have in your back pocket?
Nope.
Okay. So with that, we are going to goodbye, brother. This one out. Thank you very much, everybody, for downloading and watching this podcast. We really appreciate that. Michelle, Thank you very much for being part of our weekly Inhumans therapy sessions.
Yeah, I like how you call them therapy sessions. So thank you for letting me crash on Sundays when we talk about this. It helped me get through it and all that.
I'm guessing in the future you may or may not have some things to say about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Hey, if you want me to drop by on Sundays, I'll be more than happy to.
I don't think we'd say no.
I think we're good there. So Lauren, what do you got?
Thank you for everybody who's given us feedback. We love it when you get a hold of us on Twitter. We no longer have our Inhumans therapy sessions, but we will have our S.H.I.E.L.D. Well, they're not therapy sessions.
Gush sessions, maybe?
Gush sessions.
Shipping sessions. I don't know. I mean, there's so much.
Whatever. Our S.H.I.E.L.D.'s happy session. Oh, Michelle's kitty is on the show now. Hi, kitty. Whatever they are. But thank you so much for everybody who's gotten a hold of us. Thank you to the Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. cats, who are adorable and fluffy.
Indeed.
And thank you to everybody who listens. We really appreciate it, and we love you guys. Knowing that you're listening, knowing that you spend time to tell us that you're listening, just whatever, it makes our day. Thank you so much.
Indeed it does. And with that, we're going to get out of here. Until next time, I'm Director SP.
I'm Agent Lauren.
And I'm Consultant Michelle.
See you guys next time for Ragnarok and the Defenders! Woo!
Woo!
Thank you for listening. If you want to leave us feedback, go to gunnageek.com and you will find all our contact information and other shows. You can also visit legendsofshield.com where you'll find our complete archive of podcasts. The music heard on this podcast is by Kevin McLeod, found at incompetech.com, and also artists on pond5.com and audiojungle.net. The opinions heard on this podcast are those of the individual hosts and do not represent Stargate Pioneer Productions, Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., or Gunna Geek. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the property of the Disney Corporation, Marvel Studios, and ABC. No infringement is intended.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
How long have you been there?
Just arrived.
Okay. I was about getting ready to sing the Enterprise theme. I was like, oh, I wonder if she heard any of me singing off key.
No. I actually like that song. I mean, by itself.
Are you strapped to the chair?
Yeah.
I yelled it while I was watching. So.
Like he's nodding in the back. Yep.
You can tell Scott he's welcome on the podcast whenever he wants to.
He says you're welcome on the podcast. Yeah, he's playing Persona. So.
2, 4, 5, or 3? 5.
Okay. Let's go over episode highlights. What does there everybody.
It's well, over.
Well, yeah, okay. It's over.
Black Bolt.
What about him specifically?
Oh, okay, you know what? I want to get this out of the way because I am afraid, but when I talk about my mom's reaction, I'll say it then. So, SP, you're going to have to put this better about how Black Bolt is an
yes.
So, I'm going to get the out of my system.
Yeah, yeah, thanks.
She jumped on me.
That was awesome. The cats.
The cats.
The way, what is that? The tabby? Is that what that's called?
Yeah. It's yeah. Brown tabby.
I love tabbies.
Yeah. One of Fatty is a brown tabby. Oh, both of ours are on Scott right now.
I swear if I would pet him though, I'd end up like needing to take a shower and a bottle full of Benadryl. It just sucks. They're cute.
Yeah.
And they're, and when they want to display affection, it's like so hard not to. It's like, oh.
Yeah,
I know. Like when they jump on you during the middle of a podcast, I'm just glad it was like at the tail end of the podcast. It's like, okay, didn't mess up everything.
So I forgot to mention yesterday when I'll probably bring it up on the podcast on Thursday too, but I was sitting through the all of, because I sit through all of the previews before the movie, because I just like to doing that before Thor Ragnarok, and the Star Wars preview came up. And one of the biggest reactions of the entire setting was when the Porg was there and Chewie and the Millennium Falcon. And everybody's like, oh, yeah. It's like, oh, that'd be so cool if we actually made some real Porgs.
Yes. I love Porgs. I love Porgs so much.
Did you like Ewoks?
Yes. I have a little stuffed Ewok. It's in a little Sith cape.
I like Ewoks too, but then again, I like Jar Jar. So just for the comic relief, specifically for the comic relief, nothing really else. But, you know, the Ewoks were cuddly, comic relief, and surprisingly useful. So, yeah, what's not to like about Ewoks?
Yes. Also, they totally eat stormtroopers. Did you see that the cartoon about Leia trying to convince them not to eat a stormtrooper?
I didn't know they ate stormtroopers. This is news to me.
Oh, they are.
Where do you think they got the helmets?
They are basically cannibal Viet Cong.
I didn't know that.
Is it really cannibalism if it's not their own species?
They buried the bodies and took the armor.
No.
They were ready to eat Han and Luke and everything. They were ready to eat the people.
So did they have some charred Darth Vader?
I mean, maybe when Luke's back was.
Oh, man. Oh, that Skywalker, that's yum. It's really good.
Let me pull it up. This is great.
I did not know that. Wow. Ewoks.
Here it is. An Imperial Feast.
So, Lauren, are you up on Rebels?
No, okay. I'm not. I need to catch up.
Once you do, let me know, because there's something I want to talk to you about in relation to the next movie.
Okay.
Broadcast has been successfully terminated.
Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. is copyright 2017.